Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tanya Mosley. I loved my grandmother, but she was a Nazi. This is what my next guest, Jessica Shattuck, recently wrote in the New York Times. She goes on to write, "Understanding why and how this woman I knew and loved was swept up in a movement that became synonymous with evil has been, for me, a lifelong question." Shattuck's new novel, The Women in the Castle, takes up the question of how ordinary people respond to a regime that commits horrific atrocities. Who resists? Who is complicit? And why? Shattuck follows three women through the war and through their attempts to rebuild their lives in a time of peace. Jessica Shattuck, who is based here in Brookline, joins me now. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
So we mentioned at the top your New York Times piece and that headline that said, "I love my grandmother, but she was a Nazi." Tell us how you found out about this and why it was so important for you to say that.
Well, in a way, I always knew, but I didn't know. I knew that my grandparents were ordinary Germans. That was sort of the term that I put on their existence and their experience of the war that in some ways I think distanced the reality. And I didn't know exactly what that meant. Mm. But I did know growing up, my mother, who immigrated to this country when she was 19 and never moved back to Germany, definitely raised me with a strong sense of shame about my German heritage. And so I knew that ordinary Germans wasn't a good thing. But I guess I didn't have too fine a point on
what
that
meant, right, and what happened and the reasons why. In what ways did your family history and this story, as you came to learn about it and grow into it and learn the stories from your grandmother, play a part in this book that you wrote?
It was a huge force. I don't think I would have written this book without that. I think that as I said, I grew up hearing these stories of my mother's childhood in post-war Germany, and they were fascinating to me. They were so different. Her childhood was so different than my own American childhood, and her stories were full of things like walking to school barefoot and being woken up early to eat an egg before her sisters woke up so they wouldn't be jealous, because there was really only one egg for the family to share. Even though they raised chickens, the rest had to go to market and be sold. She would stay home from school to help in the harvest. So these were kind of these exotic, interesting stories. But as I got older, I really wanted to understand more about why was that? I mean, my father had stories about growing up in America in the same time period, and they were not as
like
drastically
this.
Different. Mm-hmm. So that kind of led to a lifetime of fascination with trying to understand what that time after the war was like, and also what the war itself was like from the German point of view and in the German experience.
Tell me a little bit about the discussions you had with your grandmother as you came into what this was and the gravity of it. Did you talk very specifically about her time there?
Yeah, I did. My grandmother was she was an unusual woman in that she really wanted to talk about this subject. I think many people of her generation don't have that feeling at all. If anything, they just want to sweep it under the carpet or avoid it, and partly for fear of upsetting themselves, for fear of upsetting others. And my grandmother, I think, really wanted to be understood. And I spoke in a lot of detail with her about it. When I was 15, my mother passed away. And so I never got the chance to ask her a lot of the questions that as I grew older, I had about her childhood and about that time. And so my grandmother was kind of a substitute. And I spent a summer there when I was in college interviewing her. And it started with mostly asking about that time after the war and my mother's childhood. But then, of course, it went back.
Mm-hmm. You have three main characters in this book, and their names are Marianne, Benita, and Anya. And these three women have three very different reactions to the rise of Hitler. How are you trying to capture the German experience differently with these three women through their particular outlooks?
Yeah, I wanted to make sure that I really, as I started writing this story, I wanted to be sure to cover a sort of span the gamut of the German political experience of that time. So while the book is framed through the three women being the widows of resistors, as the story unfolds, you learn that they're all very different and, in fact, not all exactly who they at first appear to be. And I really wanted to look at the experience of one of them, the main character, Marianne, is a resistor in her own right and is someone who saw the evil of Hitler and the danger Hitler posed unfolding very early on and recognized that and began to take action as much as she could as a woman. And so she's kind of at one end of that spectrum. And then we have another character, Anya, who you learn was really swept up in the promise of Hitler and Nazism and excited by that in the beginning. And I wanted to have these two ends because I feel like they each shed light on each other. And to me, that's a fascinating question. Why did some people see what was happening and recognize the dangers for what they were, and others remained either blind or willfully blind or self-delusional?
Yeah, you talk a bit about Anya being an idealist, and you also use the same descriptors of your grandmother.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I thought was, something that really fascinates me is that you think of it as like someone who is a resistor would be, you wouldn't be surprised to hear they were an idealist because it would be like, well, of course they resisted, they were following their ideals and were guided by that from the start, whereas someone who went along with Hitler, you know, probably was just going along. But in fact, something that I learned from my grandmother and that I think is actually not so untrue of many people of her generation, maybe especially women, was that there was a kind of idealism that had nothing to do with, or at least that was separate from any kind of anti-Semitism or hate or the motivation. We tend to think, well, someone who was a Nazi, it must have been because they hated, you know, they were filled with hate. But someone like my grandmother described her experience as being idealistic about what Hitler had to offer when he started talking about putting these youth programs together that would mix up the lower class, you know, the children who came from like factory worker backgrounds together with the children of aristocrats on these in these programs where they'd all be living together. So she had sort of embraced perversely this kind of this idea that it was like equal, you know, there was some sort of diversity, you know, obviously not within really this, it was all within the German race. But anyway, I thought that was fascinating, and I feel myself to be someone who's very wary of idealism of all stripes because of that, because I think she was a living example of how misled her own idealism was.
Going a little bit deeper in that, so there's this part in the book where this conversation where Anya and her daughter, years after the main events happen, where her daughter asks her, quote, "Weren't you alarmed by all of the racist talk, Hitler's rants about the Jewish virus and the noble German? You can't read more than four sentences by the man without knowing he was a racist fanatic." And Anya says, "I didn't notice." Why is this vantage point, this specific point, for those who didn't notice, really an important part of the story to tell?
I think that it's part of the human story part of our struggle in life is to figure out what's going on around us and make sense of it and notice the things that are happening for what they are. And I think the Germany in the 1930s and during World War II is a horrific cautionary tale of many people who didn't notice.
We've heard, of course, in reading about your book and actually a lot of comments after your op-ed piece, that there are lots of parallels to today. And what's your take on that?
Yeah, I think that I guess my main take is that I think people are really interested in looking at this time, including myself, but from new angles and new ways, because for so long we've looked at the Holocaust in a almost like this sort of horrific fairy tale like structure, this real sort of black and white, and we've looked at the villains closely and we've looked at the victims, but not so much the many, many people in between. Mm. And I think that feels increasingly relevant to people today, to think about who were those people and what were they thinking and how did they let this happen?
You said earlier, when we talked about your grandmother, you knew, but then you didn't know. And that really brings to light for me, we had this discussion with the folks from the Anti-Defamation League about the rise of anti-Semitic hateful incidents here in our state. And most of those incidents are happening with young people who are writing swastikas on walls and inside of school or comments and things like that. I'd like to know from your vantage point, what do you think is happening here at this point in this time in history where we have these young people who are taking this up in this way?
I think that some of this is kind of like a, I mean, we live in this huge world and it's an increasingly global world and we're filled, there's information coming at us from all sides about what's happening in Syria, what's happening in Germany, what's happening in France, what's happening in Russia. And people are bombarded by this, and they, especially, I would imagine, young people have no, it's hard to chart your way, and then they get drawn to these sort of simple answers. Certainly that's what happened in Germany. People were looking for very simple narratives to sign on to, and that can be so dangerous. And I think that maybe there's, I mean, it's not my field to, I don't know enough about what's happening in the, with the rise of anti-Semitism in Massachusetts specifically today, but I think that this, this kind of oversimplifying and this being drawn to symbols of power that make you feel somehow like this, your own little tribe is, you're shored up by that, is maybe part of it.
You talked a bit about in your op-ed piece your feelings about, of course, this push and pull, this love for your grandmother, but really like this disdain for what she had been a part of. I'd love for you, though, to talk just a little bit more in the few moments that we have about what you want people to take away from reading this type of story in your book, that person who was in the middle, or maybe you can sympathize with this person at the same time as feel disdain for them.
I think that, I mean, first of all, I want people to take away from my book just a good story with characters that they relate to and are interested in, because that's what I want from books that I read with plot. But I want people also, I guess, to, I hope that through looking at this point, this time, from what was going on with ordinary Germans in this gray area, people start to reflect on themselves. And that there's, instead of seeing the Nazi as the sort of monstrous, unrelatable figure, you see him as somebody who might share some terrifying things with you.
Well, this is Jessica Shattuck. She's a Brookline-based author of The Women in the Castle. Jessica, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.